Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
Hey, what a fun day we have today. Oh, yeah. I've got a regular New York personality. By that I mean he's got a lot of personality. He's also a very creative man, probably one of the most highly spoken about comedy teachers, directors in New York City. He's currently doing a new project called Desperately Seeking the Exit, directed by Obie winner Don Clancy. And we're looking to bring him on in a little while, and his name is Peter Michael Moreno. And but first, you know how I like to start my day with a little Tom Carozza, if I can find it. Put that on the switchboard. This guy's really great, though. He does all this stuff, and it's so nice when you meet so many talented people in New York, and as he is. And just bear with me a second, because here it comes. All right. This is how I like to start my show, everybody. Are you ready? Tom Carozza's from his CD, Sesti.
After Mass, just last Sunday, my Speedy Pie and I went out to eat. We each ordered a pierogi, four potato, two cheese, and two meat. Hers was gone within an instant. I had eaten six and still had two. Her eyes were full of love and hunger. My ten pierogi girl, she's twice the girl that she once was. I had two surviving pierogies on my dish, wearing cute little onions like a vest. It looked better than I could ever wish, and could lead to cardiac arrest. My mouth was drooling and my taste buds were bursting from the smell of pork. But my baby yearned for my two pierogies, so I pushed them on her plate with my fork. She's my ten pierogi girl, my ten pierogi girl, my Polish ray of hope, a living dream. Yes, my ten pierogi girl, my ten pierogi girl, she goes good with a spoon of sour cream.
She smiled when she finished, what a date. Lots of love went into that meal. Our hearts and our stomachs did inflate, and the gravy on my shirt did congeal. Don't be stingy when it comes to your loved ones. Give them everything you've got without fear. Laugh and give thanks that you found her while you watch your pierogies disappear. She's my ten pierogi girl, my ten pierogi girl. She eats them fast and doesn't ever gag. Yes, my ten pierogi girl, my ten pierogi girl. I'll never need a doggy bag. I'll never need a doggy bag.
Love it, love it. Tom Carozza. Tom Carozza, multitasking here as we speak, looking for, I've downloaded all this great stuff. Okay, here we go. Now, I'm going to bring on my special guest today. I'll tell you a little bit more about him. Wow, this guy, I'm telling you, everybody I meet loves this guy. If I say I'm having him as my guest, they go, we love him. All right, in 2007, Peter Michael Moreno wrote a musical based on the film Desperately Seeking Susan, featuring the music of Blondie. It opened in London's West End and closed a month later. Desperately Seeking the Exit offers a behind-the-scenes peek at how this £4 million musical was made and unmade, including all of his meetings and Debbie Harry and even Madonna, the workshops, the previews. It's coming to New York, and it's opening very, very soon. So let's bring Peter Michael Moreno on. I hope I'm saying your name right. Peter, are you there? Peter?
You know.
There you are. Am I Marino?
Yes, Marino, like the Italian ice. Ice, oh. Ice, baby.
Ice, ice, baby. I was going to say, or like Dan Marino, the football player.
No, but... well, I get that all the time. Are you related to Dan Marino? I say, no, he's related to me.
Anyway, this is great news. So this
yeah.
is like, this has been your passion, your love's work. You put so much time into, and now it's coming. Tell us all about it.
Well, yeah, it is coming in a week.
Wow.
Which is a bit terrifying. I have to say it's been a really, really fun ride. Working with John Clancy has just been, like, one of the highlights of the year. It's been great. And,
he's an Obie winner.
He is an Obie winner. He has won Obies, which is very cool. He doesn't, pick up projects just
haphazard.
As they sort of fall into his lap. He's very selective. But I've known John for a long time. I've wanted to work with him for a really long time. And John actually had a very similar experience writing an adaptation of a movie into a play and was working overseas on that. And that was a big sort of scary fiasco as well. So he kind of understood a lot of the material in my show about sort of being a foreigner in a foreign country that speaks the same language and how, you know, you still can't communicate really.
Oh, yeah, and it's interesting too. I think we should add. Let's go back a little. Okay. 2007, you decided to put the show together. Why?
2005, I decided to put the show together.
2005. Okay, let's go back even further.
I mean, I actually recreate the glorious evening, a boring Saturday night in New York City where I was sitting around with a pal listening to Blondie music and thinking, wow, this would be a great musical. And, you know, what could it be based on and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, before you know it, Desperately Seeking Susan sort of came up as a possibility. And then, you know, after months of sort of really diving into the world of Desperately Seeking Susan and reading all the different drafts of the screenplay and watching the movie and reading the book, there is actually a book.
Really?
Yeah.
And how did you obtain the rights?
It was really easy. This,
oh, no.
I mean, every single thing about getting the show to happen was easy, which is sort of what makes the story even more insane. Literally wrote a 30-page treatment that explained how each song worked with each scene in the show based on the movie. And, you know, Blondie really only writes want songs. Every song is about wanting something. They don't write typical,
call me.
I hate you songs. You know, yeah, Call Me is a great example of that. And, you know, I think it's really important in musicals that characters want something. And, you know, when their emotions are so high that they can't speak about it, they have to sing about it. And Blondie's songs made perfect sense. So the treatment was really detailed, probably about 18 Blondie songs in there. I had changed the setting of the movie from 85 to 79, so it would have more of a punk rock sort of Debbie Harry feel to it. I also wanted to sort of pull it away from Madonna because we weren't doing a Madonna musical. And MGM, you know, we went out for lunch and they said yes, like right at the lunch table in Times Square. And then we went to Debbie Harry and, you know, her people, and they said yes right away. And at that point, we had already had a top-notch, you know, New York Broadway producer signed on to be the lead producer, and the old Vic in London was the co-producers, and it just sort of snowballed from there, you know, workshops and previews and opening night.
It's a pretty amazing story that you got it so far. And now the first production was done where?
The very first production was done on the West End at the Novello Theater. We were right next door to Dirty Dancing, across the street from Buddy, and down the block from Lord of the Rings, the musical.
That's amazing, Peter. But, you know, you're also, I was telling my earlier, I don't know if you heard it, but how well known you are in the city.
It's hilarious.
That everybody, you know, I think even I met somebody and I said, how do you know me? And she said, Peter Michael Marina recommended you. And I said, who's Peter McAlery? And he goes, you don't know Peter McAlery? Well, he recommended you. He knows you. And I'm like, well, I have to find out who he is now. And then I found out, and I started asking everybody, and I don't know if you, that was Tom Carosa's song.
Yeah, of course I know Tom, yeah.
And Tom, I said, Tom, do you know Peter? He goes, how could you not know Peter McAlery? And I'm like, am I the only person? And then I find out that everybody raves about you. Oh,
well,
my God. And
me,
then I had Alicia.
Many, many people who don't know who I am. So
Alicia Levy on my show.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And she was
Lori
raving
Hamill.
About you, and she goes, it's directed by Peter McAlery. I said, who is this guy? Everybody knows him but me. And I said, I've got to have him on the show. This is amazing. But you're also, you're an award-winning teacher.
Yeah,
and you,
yeah.
Your class is at the Pit, and I know that everybody raves about your work in putting together one-person shows.
Yeah, it's just sort of, that sort of has become the thing that I've been doing, like, constantly since the show closed, ironically.
And you're a performer. You were in stunts
well,
for 5
yeah,
years.
I was. I mean, this is actually Desperately Seeking the Exit is my first time back on stage in about 10 years. And when I was in Stomp, I never spoke. So, I mean, nobody speaks in that show.
No, they
so,
just stomp.
it's really the first time I'm speaking on stage in a, probably around 12 or 13 years.
Well, this is very exciting news then. This is, so tell us all about where it's opening and...
It is, well, it is a site-specific production, which means that it's in the basement of a bar. There's this great little gem of a space called the Triple Crown Stage, which I've renamed the Triple Crown Underground, just to sort of keep with the whole British theme. And it's on 7th Avenue and 28th Street. And, yeah, I stumbled in there. I was, you know, I didn't want to do a show. I didn't want to get up on stage and have, you know, slides and lasers and glitter, things that are normally in the show, types of shows that I direct and develop. And I was watching a one-person show one night, and I thought, oh, I just want to do something different. So I started looking at pubs because,
well, that's
you know,
the new trend now. We're actually going, you're such a youngster, but we're actually going backwards in that the performance art era of the 80s was all like the Ear Inn. It was all these bars and pubs, and that you saw a lot of talent came out of these. This is where all the stuff was happening, not in the theaters.
Yeah. It's funny. I was I'm not dropping a name here, but
yeah,
I was out having lunch with Susan Seidelman this week, and she directed the movie Desperately Seeking Susan, and
yes.
We sort of became friends way after the show closed. I mean, we had never nobody from the movie knew about the musical, but then again, nobody in London knew about the musical, which is probably why it closed. And we were talking about, you know, she's a real 80s fixture, downtown, you know, Lower East Side fixture, and a lot of her movies are set down there. And we were talking about how there's just nothing around anymore. Luca Lounge is closing now. I just read that last night.
Oh, no.
And
that's,
I know.
I just interviewed Cambry Cruz on my show. Do you know Cambry?
No, I don't.
Oh, she had something. And the Stone Brothers, who I'll be performing with later today at the Friars Club, they run a room there. That's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're renovating or what, but, you know, we were talking about Fez. Remember Fez? I mean, that was
Fez,
a great...
Fez, I performed at Fez.
That was a fantastic venue. There were so many great places down there.
And Nada,
absolutely. Nada. There's the old living room, you know. There isn't really a place for people to very easily just throw something up and try something out. It's like you have to invest a huge amount of money in a theater. You know, renting a theater is it's insane. Nobody has that kind of money.
You're at the mercy of the theater, as I was with my show, where they were decided to take apart the theater while my show was in production.
In the middle of the show?
Yes, and every time I'd show up, there'd be something missing. You know, first the sound system, then the lights, then the wall.
That sounds like fun.
I ended up making curtains to hang over all the gaps so people wouldn't know. You know, I was like, I'll hang curtains. No one will know. I can grommet. But it's, yeah, it's great like that. And I got to tell you who's in the chat room, because the chat room's really, I don't know if you have in the chat room, but let's see here. Oh, you have another radio show listening. Betty Jo Tucker from Movie Attic Headquarters. Hey, Betty Jo, he might be a good guest for your show, too. He does have a lot of knowledge with the celebrities there, and she does a great show. It's every Tuesday at 4 p.m. It's on Blog Talk Radio called Movie Attic Headquarters. Betty, post your site. T.L. Walker, thank you for joining. Cowpote is in the room, and he's got a show. Post your sites, everyone, with your radio shows, okay? And they're really great. You know what? We should give them a taste because I did download you to
strange feeling. You were downloading
me. I was downloading. Well, I was Googling you too, but we won't talk about that.
I never do that. I never Google myself.
Oh, God. You don't?
I mean, when you have a musical on the West End and you're reviewed in every single international paper and you see your three names attached to some really horrible reviews, you kind of stop Googling yourself. You don't really want to read that stuff. So, yes, I have stopped
Googling.
Peter,
you gave me a lot of songs here. Let's see. What is BioCore?
BioCore? That sounds like an exercise program, which I would not know anything about.
Loncore?
Blancor. Oh, the Blancor. Yes, that was our word for the encore. That was, you know, it's sort of almost a requirement in a jukebox musical, at least in the UK, that there's some sort of big party at the end of the show where you play all the songs that you just heard for the past 2 hours,
yes,
and then the audience is expected to sort of, you know, get up and dance and feel great so that they actually forget about the other 2 hours of sort of dreck that they saw, and then they leave feeling really good because they were dancing and singing at the end.
Oh, God, Peter, you're so hip and trendy.
I just
Peter
do what everyone else
wants
does.
Peter wants to know, how does Peter feel about the TV show Smash?
I don't think it's a great lesson on how a show is made.
You're right.
Yeah, I mean, I admire the network for, you know, trying to bring the world of show business to television. That doesn't happen very often.
It's a little ridiculous. It's like, hey, you want to hook up? Do a show.
Yeah, you know, the odd thing is that there's there are so many crazy, unbelievable things that happen on that show in the process of putting together a musical that when I look at my own experience of putting together a musical, they're not that dissimilar. You kind of, like, that's a lot of what Desperately Seeking the Exit is about. It's these jaw-dropping.
Wait a minute. Desperately Seeking Susan. I just want to be clear so the people who don't know you. Desperately Seeking Susan, the musical, was the one you produced.
I did not produce that.
No, no.
Desperately Seeking Susan, the musical, I was the writer of.
No, no, I mean Desperately Seeking the Exit.
Yes.
So this is, did you change it at all from its Tokyo performance to now?
Oh, I think that you're confused.
Yes,
Desperately Seeking Susan is a musical based on the movie Desperately Seeking Susan that uses the musical
That's
Blondie.
That's the confusion, yes.
That was on the West End, and that was also in Tokyo.
So this
that
is
was
a new
huge £4 million musical that I would never be able to afford.
Okay.
Desperately Seeking the Exit is my one-man show about the creation of Desperately Seeking Susan,
there
the musical.
We go.
It's called Desperately Seeking the Exit because that was the headline of one of the reviews that I read the day after the show opened.
Hey, Betty Jo, just so you feel better, Betty Jo's listening. Betty Jo, can you type in that quote that Roger Ebert wrote, you know, the famous critique? Could you type that into the chat room for me? I'm going to cheer you up with another quote. So are you're doing all the music in the show too then?
All the music in?
In Desperately Seeking the Exit? Is there music?
There's no music in Desperately Seeking the Exit. It's just
the confusion.
Really?
About.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I know people are very confused about the fact that they can't make reservations for the show. That seems to be a real sticking point with
And
with,
what's
with
the
folks.
Website they should go to?
They should just go to www.seekingtheexit.com, and that says in big bold letters, free, no reservations, show up early and get yourself a drink and a seat.
Now it makes sense to me because you send me the MP3s that were from the show.
Right,
because
there are no MP3s of Desperately Seeking the Exit yet because I haven't done the show yet. I've been dripping and drabbing little bits of stuff from Desperately Seeking the Exit that are cut. I've cut a bunch of bits, so I've just been sort of leaking the stuff that's cut from the show, so you have an idea
that's
of what.
My confusion.
Yes.
Will you be playing
I do not
any,
do
of the
any
music
songs
during
in...
the show? Your show.
Sorry.
Will you be playing any of the songs from your musical during your show, or is it just straight out you?
The stage is basically me and a stool and a boombox, and I do
Oh my God,
play.
You're doing a Nancy Lombardo production.
Well, you know, I wrote the show specifically for the Edinburgh Fringe, and for the Fringe, you have to be able to carry the show on your back, basically. So that is really why it's just very, very, very simple. It's sort of a combination of stand-up comedy, solo show and storytelling in one one-hour show. So I do not play a whole lot from the musical Desperately Seeking Susan,
okay.
But I do recreate the...
It sounds like a great show. For one thing, besides you're so well-known that, you know, people really should check this out just because for the experience of seeing somebody like you, who everybody raves about, but a one-man show about the show. Now, you dealt with celebrities in this?
Yeah, I mean, Debbie Harry, she's a celebrity. I dealt with her because we used her music in the musical, and I also had requested Debbie and Chris Stein, who's another member of Blondie, to write a new song for the show. So I worked with them on that a little bit, and I had to deal with Madonna a little bit. I never
in what
way? Well, I really wanted to use a little bit of the song Into the Groove in the musical, and that song is the only song from the movie Desperately Seeking Susan that Madonna has. A lot of people think that Madonna, like, had a lot of songs in that movie, but she only had that one, and I wanted to use a little bit of it in the show, and we had to make an audio recording for Madonna of what it was going to sound like so she could say yes or no. So I actually, in Desperately Seeking the Exit, I actually play that exact record. I have the recording of me saying, "Hi, Madonna, it's Peter Michael Marino who's doing the Desperately Seeking Susan musical." And I won't tell you what happened with that, but until you see the show. But, yeah, that was my brush with greatness. You know, Rosanna
right.
Arquette came
yes.
to the opening night, so I met
wow.
her. I mean, she, you know, she played the lead in the movie. And there were other celebrities dropping in and out, I suppose. I don't know. I don't really think of celebrities so much as celebrities, just as people
well,
who are
but
cool.
Well, but the fact that you took this on, Peter, a project like this, I mean, nobody says, "I think I'll just make the musical version of this very famous movie." And does it. And you know what? I'm not just going to do it in England. I'm going to do it in Tokyo.
Well, it wasn't my – I mean, yeah, it wasn't really my plan to do it in Tokyo. You know, the show opened in London. That was something that was hatched by the producers of the show very, very early on in the development process. And with our original director, who no longer was the director of the show, but he's a very, very famous American Broadway Tony Award-winning director. It was his idea to open the show in London.
The clips you sent me, I mean, the MP3s you sent me, those were from the actual show?
Yeah, those are all from the actual show.
And is that the cast singing?
Yeah.
All right, you know what? I want to play one, okay? Let's play
cool.
one. So you get a drink of water while I play this one, okay?
Okay.
Oh, here's my favorite, okay. From the show. Here we go.
Get you one way or another.
see that show.
Wow, that was awesome. Who did your orchestrations?
The orchestrations were done by Martin Koch, who actually did the orchestrations for a little show called Mamma Mia.
Oh, my goodness. That was amazing.
Yeah,
that was like
visually it was a great number, too.
I mean, I'm pumped just listening to it.
Well,
it's also
nice. I think it's also interesting to hear something that you've only heard sung by Debbie Harry, sung by a male. I think that he adds...
reminded me almost like it with a tinge of Rent, you know?
Sure.
That kind
I'll
of power
Rent.
From a male singer. I love that. That's awesome. Wow. Good for you. But that's so great. Now, tell us again, say your information again, when the dates it's running, where they go to find out more info. Give all that info again.
Okay. The show, Desperately Seeking the Exit, opens a week from today, as a matter of fact, as my stomach hits the ground. That's May 3rd. It runs Thursdays and Fridays in May at the Triple Crown, which is on 7th Avenue and 28th Street. And all the information you'd ever need is at www.seekingtheexit.com.
Seeking the exit.
Just Google Peter Michael Marino, and it's probably one of the first things that shows up.
And this is, you must be very excited. I when you said you're using the boombox, are you using it for the music in between or just for a recording?
I'm using it to recreate the moment where I was listening to the Blondie music and putting the whole thing together. And there's some other, like I said, I also use it to play the Madonna interview, and I also play a little of the Tokyo production.
I just mentioned that because you know the cost of mounting a show. I actually got a boombox with a remote control because I can't afford a musician. I'm like, musicians want more than we make.
Well, the stage I'm performing on is about 6 feet by 6 feet, so there really isn't room for anybody playing anything.
and you just found it, or is it a friend? Or how did you find this little gem of a space?
Well, I live on 30th and 8th, so I just was walking by one day. I went to a whole bunch of Irish pubs in the city and checked them all out. And
look
that
at
one.
You. So if anyone's thinking of doing a show, look at your inspiration here.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
find your space. Look at that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of great little spaces. If we extend the show, I'm actually thinking about extending it at the Hourglass. You know, the Hourglass on Restaurant Row. They've got a great little room upstairs also where you can,
the
you know,
Hourglass,
get drinks.
That tiny little...
Yeah,
not
yeah.
The Hourglass. It sits like 10 people.
Yeah, but upstairs you can fit about 30.
Oh, you know what, Peter? Absolutely right. I went to a party there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
wow.
A bunch of great spaces. And I don't, also, the basement at the Pit is a fantastic space. I mean,
hey, you have
really
a fan
great.
on the chat room. Leslie... I'm not sorry.
Oh, Leslie Jevons?
Jevons. Peter, I love you. I cannot wait to see the show in Edinburgh.
Yay. Oh, Leslie's great. She's a, you know, we became like blood brothers in a weird way. She came to see the show in London. I didn't know her. She's probably the biggest Blondie / Desperately Seeking Susan fan ever. And she became a big champion of the show. And over the years, we've just become really good friends. And we're sort of feel like we've been separated at birth. I called her a blood brother because that's one of my favorite musicals, although I know I might get shot for saying that. It's also one of her favorite musicals. You know what? I'm fine with saying that something that I loved something or I enjoyed something or it's one of my favorites. It doesn't necessarily mean it's good. You know
Betty,
what I mean?
Yeah, I know. That's okay. Oh,
and
Roger,
I think people
felt
that way
here,
about the musical.
Betty Jo Tucker from Movie Attic Headquarters, every Tuesday at 4 p.m., BTR Radio. Betty Jo, she found the quote that I said that because last week I interviewed Alan Zweibel. Do you know who he is?
Yes. Oh, yes. I just listened to that interview that you did with him.
Oh, yeah. He's fantastic. And we're going to redo it because he got a little confused as to the time, but I love him. And here's the review, so you'll feel better, that Roger Ebert wrote about the movie North, which Alan wrote, okay? I hated this movie. I hated it. Do you feel better now, Peter?
I feel so much better. I feel so much better.
And it's so great that you're doing this, that you mount it and you've taken it. I'm with you on that. You want to do a show, just, you know, I got to tell you my thing that I've done over the years, Peter, when I would do shows. It's so
working back asswards for me, but my friends would laugh at this. Nancy, you book a theater and then you write the show?
That's the only way to get anything done.
Right?
You have to have, I mean, I teach all my students this. I mean, I think it's why things get done in the class, because they know they only have 8 weeks and they're going to have a show to do, and it makes you get stuff done. So, yeah, I mean, I have to go to Edinburgh now.
Oh,
I have to do the show 26 nights in a row.
That's a dream. So what do you do? Do you do acting? What other things do you do besides this?
No, I haven't acted in 15 years. This is my first time acting.
Awesome.
So what else do I do? I
know you teach.
Yeah.
And you write.
That's pretty much it. I teach, develop, direct. You know, I've directed a crap load of stuff at Ars Nova the past couple of years and the past couple of years. I mean, Ars Nova is just one of my favorite places to work.
Wow.
And I do voiceovers for TV and radio.
Okay, that's what I meant.
My first time being heard on the radio in a very long time, though. So,
but you do have a great voice. And what do you feel that your main message, without giving out anything, that your one man show is putting out there, without giving anything away?
What the message is about the show?
Your message in your show, like every show is like. I know your theme is, but there's always some kind of message in there that the people walk away with.
Well, you know, even though this is a show about mounting a huge musical, and it's a show about being in a foreign country and trying to communicate, and it's a show about all the technicalities of putting on a show and what goes wrong with the show, I think it has a very universal message that, you know, look, when the show closed, I went into a really horrible depression. I didn't leave my house for a year, which is like me. I mean, I'm like out every night.
I know.
So I hope that it gives anybody who's ever gone through something that has put them in a very terrible place that they never expected to be, hope that there's sort of always, I hate to say, a light at the end of the tunnel, but there kind of always is. I mean, you don't always stay in that place. And even though my musical was a tremendous opportunity and a tremendous failure critically, it did put me in touch with so many people that I never would have met.
Clips of it. It looked fantastic.
Oh, well, thanks.
It looked fantastic. It would be great to get it produced. It's so good. But the fact, I think I'm getting a very positive message. I mean, just about you. We've never met, only vis-a-vis.
This is true.
We all know all these mutual people, but that you really give the young performer a sense of just do it. And you don't just say it, you do it.
Yeah, well, I was taught that in college, to just do it. One of my acting teachers always said, just do it. Don't wait around for people to do it. And did we have the same teacher?
Shaw Robinson? I don't know.
No.
Different school.
Very wonderful man named Warren Enters. He always said, just do it. And even in college and even out of college, all my friends, everyone just did their own thing. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why.
You must be awfully proud that you, I mean, to me, this is an amazing feat. You're a young guy.
Well,
you produced a show in Tokyo and in London, and now you're going to go to Edinburgh. This is pretty awesome.
Well, I really love seeing the world. I like seeing all the people that I've met over the years, you know, on the other side of the pond. I mean, I've become friends with every single person involved in the show. You know, they all live in London. They all get shows on the West End. Well, they're my friend. I have to go to the West End. I have to go to London. I have to see them in their show. You know, I want to.
This is amazing. And the fact is, okay, let's repeat the info. Repeat the info again. And if you're listening, you could just go to his website as well, but he's going to repeat it for you.
Go ahead. Just go to seekingtheexit.com, and all the information is there. The show opens a week from today at 7 o'clock. It is free. There are no reservations. You can drink there. You can eat there. You can carouse and party.
After the show, I have to race and perform at the Friars Club. But if you'll resend me on my email so I can try and get there, but that's great. And actually, resend me on my email, because I want to send it to some press person for you.
Fantastic.
Okay?
Yeah.
With that, and it's great. Is there just a snippet you could give me, a little paragraph or a line from the show?
Oh. Ooh.
How about the opening? Just the first.
The opening?
The sentence.
Well, that's going to.
Oh, would that give it away?
Oh,
no,
my
okay.
gosh.
don't want to give it away.
Here's an interesting thing. I think when a British person, I mean, I talk a lot about British people and American people and how we're very different in our language, and I greet the audience by asking them if they're all right. British people always say, you all right. They say that to you all the time. And I learned after many months that they weren't actually asking me if I was all right. I was always giving them these answers, but they were actually just saying hello.
Oh.
So my top of my show, I'm asking the audience if they're all right, and then I'm just saying hello.
That's cute.
That's pretty much it.
Are you having a laugh?
Oh, yes. All those wonderful cheers and see you later.
And what's the running time of your show?
60 minutes.
60 minutes.
And it'll fly by. I did two readings of it in Buffalo last month, and people were shocked that it was over when it was over. They thought it was like 5 minutes.
Oh, well,
yeah, I mean, it's a speeding train. It's a train.
Let's hope this is going to be a long run and an OB in your future with this. I did bring it to the attention of somebody there, but
I don't know if it's maybe they'll be giving OB awards out for people who do shows in the basements of bars. That would be amazing.
Why not?
The 80s all over again, baby.
I loved it. The thing about performing back then and doing not sticking, because I'm not a conventional stand-up comic by any means, in that I sing in my act.
Yes.
And I'm not conventional that way, but the fact when you would perform in these venues, people would be drinking, there might be sounds, and it would be a mixture of bar patrons and people who really want to see the show, and the bar patrons, fishermen types, would like the show. And really, they'd come up and say something like, that was very interesting, the context in which you, and you're like, oh, thank you, you were listening, all right. You know, I didn't think I was going to like you. That was always my favorite one.
Oh, yeah, that's the best.
Well,
I'm glad
you
stayed. Thank you for staying, really.
But it's so good, and it's going to run all May?
Yeah, pretty much Thursdays and Fridays in May, and hopefully I'll extend it at some point. When you don't have reservations, you don't know how many people are coming, so you don't know. But we'll see.
Could you put it up on your Facebook events?
Oh, there's already a Desperately Seeking the Exit New York City event, and I'd love for people to come and visit that.
Oh, is that on Facebook?
That.
Yeah, that would be great, because then Peter can get a count. So go to Facebook.
Oh, just Desperately Seeking the Exit. Just look into that on Facebook, and you'll see Desperately Seeking the Exit. Luckily, no one else is doing a show called Desperately Seeking the Exit anywhere. So,
Batra. No, kidding. It's the musical. No Exit. Desperately Seeking the Exit.
That's right.
By Sartre. Oh, my Betty Jo Tucker from Movie Attic Headquarters is pimping my CD for me. Thank you. Yes, my CD is available. Color Me Crazy on CD, baby. Thank you, Betty Jo. You really are a great guest. Betty Jo, he'd be a good call-in one if you're doing one about the theater scene in New York. He really does know his stuff. I'm talking to my listeners at the same time.
Oh.
You have a bunch of anonymous guests on there, too, and Tia Walker. Some people put their names, some don't. And also, I have to listen to George Bettinger, 106 Hot Mix, every day at 4. And Betty Jo Tucker, every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Great show, great guest. Betty Jo, I'm so jealous. Oh, by the way, Peter, congratulations. This episode was chosen as a featured episode on Blog Talk Radio.
Woohoo!
Just so you know. And Betty Jo always gets today's pick, even though we have the same guest, Betty Jo. I wrote them a letter. But it's really great. I'm very your family must be very proud of you. Do they come to your shows?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. My family's really fantastic. They live in Long Island, and they get on the LIRR, and they come see every crazy thing I do.
Oh,
no matter how filthy or avant-garde or ridiculous, they're always there. They're great. Everyone should have a family like mine.
Well, this is great. Okay, let's give the information again, because that's what we do on this show.
All right. Desperately Seeking the Exit starts a week from today at the Triple Crown Theater on 7th Avenue and 28th Street. It's free, so just show up a little bit before the show, grab yourself a drink, and get your butt in the seat and have a great time. And it runs on Thursdays and Fridays in May. Most shows.
Give me that address very slowly.
330 7th Avenue at 28th Street. Triple Crown.
That's easy.
330 7th Avenue, which is at 28th Street. It's near the 1N&R.
1N&R, and they can go to your Facebook page to say if they're coming or not, and it's first come, first serve, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. We didn't mention the most important part.
What?
the cost?
It's free.
It's free. But if they wanted to donate to the production, will there be a jar out?
Actually, what I'm encouraging people to do is to spend their money on food and alcohol that night, and when they get home, go on to seekingtheexit.com and make a contribution to my Rocket Hub campaign, which I'm trying to raise money for to make the road to Scotland a little bit smoother. So,
Rocket Hub.
.com.
So even if you're listening and can't go to the show, you can still give to Peter.
You certainly can.
And help his dream come true. Well, Peter, the 40 minutes have flown.
Wow, I feel like I was just having a regular phone conversation, so thank you very much.
That's how I try to do it, yes. And we'll go out on one of my songs from my CD, but Peter, I look forward to it. I'm going to try to make it and check out your Facebook, Desperately Seeking the Exit. And everybody, you're going to hear a lot about this guy. He's fantastic. I'm going to call you when my show gets up, Peter.
Thank you very
much. Your
Nancy.
Eye going on there. And
I'm sending you the press release right now, so you can get it out to all your connections.
Send me the press release, and I want to forward it to a press connection that I have for
Amazing.
You, because you're a phenomenal guest, Peter
thank
Michael
you.
Marino. Boom, boom. That's how it's so you should have a boom, boom at the end of it. Thank you for being on Comedy Concepts.
Thank you.
Go check out Desperately Seeking the Exit. I love this man. I love him. Bye, Peter.
Bye.
I once dreamed of being chased through a dollhouse by a white lobster that wore glitter and spoke with a French accent. Now, what this meant, I'll never know. But I do know if I told anybody, I'd be labeled a lunatic. And they did it wrongly on lessons for the public good. Let's say you're at a party, and you can take out a labeling gun and start tagging people like they do in Wild Kingdom. Wacker. Loser. You're so friendly. That would really be good. But not too friendly like the guys in the office, or your boss who's really nice. Except in an earthquake, you'd really be thinking, he's old, he's slow, I can beat him to the Georgia. Oh yeah, LA's a jammed up situation. I have enough faults, I wouldn't purposely build my home over one. The one time I was naive enough to think that generic food was for the elderly. It made sense to me at the time, all those big black and white labels. And then a friend pointed out, Nancy, there's a difference between generic and geriatric. Boy, did I feel foolish. Not to be confused with that. But I do think they have a lot to do with each other. Since men tend to do a lot of thinking from that area. What all this has to do with nothing is, don't you know? How my brain works and connects things. Like so. So anytime you think I'm crazy, you're probably right.